Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Well, hello you. Welcome to the Matchball Podcast from us, The Square Ball. I'm Dan Moylan. With me, Michael Normanton.
Hello.
And Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
And the Matchball, supported by Levi Solicitors for 10% off your legal fees. Mention The Square Ball when you inquire. Go to levisolicitors.co.uk. Nice to have them on board. Thank you. And a nice day to celebrate as well. We were top of the league for a little bit anyway. 1-0 victory. Yorkshire Perlow scores the winner. What a day. It's been a great day. Talk me through it from your point of view then, Michael.
It was nice. First half, I thought we were very good. Second half, in a strange twist, we were much worse, but scored. So maybe that's the way we need to go this season. Be worse. That seems to be... Being too good has, I think, held us back so far this year.
And I feel, after the second half, I feel like pretty much a minimum 100 years old, personally. It's, that free kick at the end was unnecessary. I think
it was a big handball shout as well.
Yeah, and there was the long throw afterwards, and you just see them winding up, and it's like, this is too much.
But we had that beautiful slapstick moment where Alioski tried some mad tricks.
I wrote
just before that.
I'm just going to refer to my notes and let's see what I did write down for that. I think I wrote down Ezgin Alioski, the worst trick I have ever seen in my life.
What was he? Do we know what he was trying to do?
He was trying to, I can't remember what the word for it is, but we can do a back heel flick around right. The player and go, but then I don't know what his next move is going
to
be.
I think he tried to kick it, that sort of thing where you kick it with one foot onto your other leg kind of thing. So you kind of almost, it looks like a back heel, but you're kind of doing it to bounce it off your leg and go forward.
Yeah. And he just, I mean,
I'll say that it could have been fucking anything. No idea.
He was all in with the party mood, wasn't he?
Strange game for Alioski. I thought he was actually very good. He was one of our better players, but that. And then he did also shoot over the bar from about 4 yards out.
Yes, he did.
Which was, and it looked like it went a long way over. Certainly by the time it hit the cop, it was somewhere around row N, I think. It was
at no point when he went through on that did you think he's going to put this in now?
No.
It was just the wrong side for him. It was like the one in the first half when Bamford went through, and because it was on his right foot, I think I have more confidence in my right foot than Patrick Bamford has in his. And instead of him just whacking it, it ended up with him back-heeling it, and then there was Costa had the shot, and then it came to Dallas, and you think Dallas is going to hit it, and he passes it to Harrison, and you think, right, Harrison's going to turn and shoot, and instead it's a 1-2 back to Dallas, and it's another shot, and it's blocked. It's just like, somebody just leather the damn thing in the goal. It's all, and it would have been, if old Patrick just used his swinger and just thought, I'll try this. But then, when Alioski's was going through, it just didn't look like it was a... I think that was, he needed to hit it with his wrong foot as well. And it was just, I assume we're not going to score.
Composure not his strong point, really.
Well, in the car on the way here, I thought, what are we going to talk about? Because it followed quite a similar pattern to something we've seen across the last few weeks. This kind of growing sense of panic in the second half, losing control of the game, being 1-0 in front, but being terrified. What do you make of it?
We can talk about the first half, because I thought we were brilliant. And Bielsa said after the game, he thinks that's one of the best halves and one of the best performances we've put on. Because I was worried with all the 100-year hype and everything that was going on and all the... Because when they were bringing the legends out onto the pitch, and the whole crowd's going like, Andy Cousins, hey.
And the atmosphere at the start was brilliant, wasn't it?
It was, and but the players were doing their warm-up while that's going on, and so it was all quite distracting, and there's the risk, that whole thing of you have the fireworks and the photograph that they've got together with the the display, the 100, the stand, yeah. And the
they
fireworks.
Missed off the pound sign off the front of that, though, the 100.
Oh, come on.
Hey, I'm only kidding. It's a day for celebration.
And that and the photo that they've got, because fireworks in the daytime, you can always be, is it going to look that good? And they've actually nailed that photo, really, haven't they? They've set that up really well. And the worry is then that the actual game is just going to be rubbish and we'll lose.
Well, that's my question, actually, that I've got scribbled down in front of me, is did we play the game and not the occasion?
No. I think that we've... Certainly in the first half, we thrived on the occasion. I think the players started... There was parts in the first half where we were... Do you remember the famous clip at Wigan away last year when there were 7 Leeds players stopping a counter-attack? There was stuff like that going on again, and everybody looks not just really up for it, but then also really able to turn that into attacking football. I was making my notes through the match, and I noticed I was... because I've tried to put the time down, and I was writing every minute on the 40 seconds in the first half. Yeah, I got, 10:50, 12:50, 14:50, 50, 16:50, 18:30. That's all when Leeds were like attacking, 19:50. So once a minute, we're doing something in Birmingham's half that's dangerous. And they didn't come near our goal in the first half. It was superb. Slacked off in the second half, but then that's why Nketiah should go back to Arsenal.
That moment you talk about in the first half where Bamford, you thought Bamford has to score. Then he set up Costa, who you thought has to score. Went to Harrison, who has to score.
And back to
Went
Dallas.
Went to Dallas, who has to score. It was like the XG would have been about 4 just from that, like, 10 seconds of the play. And we still didn't fucking score. And it is bits like that where you do... I can see maybe even from the players' point of view, they just think we're never going to score. This isn't our day. And I think that translates itself to the crowd as well when you've seen such a number of glorious chances. That's as many chances as you're creating a whole game sometimes in a 10-second period.
I bumped into a couple of people on the way in and they were challenging me of my 100-0 prediction, and we agreed that possibly a 100 XG to nil would probably be more likely. And we're only 1.67 in that game, actually, according to this app, versus Birmingham's 0.9. So I guess the one with Harrison's Baxter goal is not that easy and stuff, but I think that's it. With the first half, we were really strong, but then it is true that when Bamford went off, we got worse, combined with Birmingham. I think Pep Clatet must have been playing the Ace of Spades at them, Motorhead in the dressing room at halftime, because they came out looking a lot more... Well, they actually did something, because they did fuck all in the first half, so they came out and actually had a kick of the ball. I think that same thing of like, we haven't scored 0-0.
Well, yeah, you've said it a lot, haven't you, that if we score early, it settles the nerves.
Yeah.
Whereas we've not managed to do that. It's been far too tight for that, whether through, you know, luck or bad management or whatever you want to call it. We just haven't managed to do it.
Everybody's on the same page. Players, fans, management. If we keep seeing us having chances and not scoring, and we get nervous.
Having a penalty in the 47th minute would have potentially helped us to get a hold on the game. When the referee, it seemed to me that he didn't know if it was actually a foul.
Are you on about the Nketiah one?
Yeah. And he looked in the box to me, and I don't think he was entirely sure if it was a foul, so he just gave a free kick on the edge of the box instead.
It certainly ended in the box. I think that the foul itself might have just on fractions of it just outside.
I don't want to hear this, Dan. It doesn't fit into my narrative of Football League conspiracy.
Penalty then?
Penalty, yeah, definitely.
Nailed on, yeah.
My theory was, but because the referee had put it right on the line that he guessed, like you don't, because he doesn't know if it was that close on the line, he couldn't say the foul definitively happened there. So just kind of gone, I don't want to give a penalty for that, but I have to give a free kick. So
because it looked quite weak, didn't it, as a challenge? It didn't look like it was maybe like 0.8. of a free kick.
Are we talking expected penalties now?
Expected fouls, yeah. Something like, do you know what I mean though? It felt a little bit of a soft one.
Mm. Yeah, there was a few rolls from Nketiah. He made no doubt that was something that happened. It was, but then Albert Nightingale, if we wanted to celebrate Leeds United centenary, he was famous, according to Jack Charlton, in the 1950s for being fouled on the halfway line and falling over in the penalty area to win a penalty for Leeds. So it was good to see Eddie Nketiah, who's obviously studied carefully all that stuff and bringing it back.
The referee had a bit of a strange game in the first half. Their number 34, called Sunjic, he went down under an Alioski challenge and basically just laid on the floor until the referee booked him, booked Alioski. And then about a minute later, he fouled Alioski, and Alioski did the same trick. He was like, I'm just going to lay down here until you book him. Yeah. And then as soon as he did, just got up. It's like, he was obviously just assessing potential damage before he was deciding if it was a yellow card or not.
I'll say that about it. Sundjic, when he was lying down, I looked at Birmingham's bench and their physio didn't even move. There was no expectation he was hurt from there. So
yeah,
well, I thought the referee was all right. Apart from
he was
that.
All right.
He was like getting things right, but then
did he play the game or the occasion? Yeah,
I think he's just obviously easily conned.
Talk to me about Nketiah, Bamford, and that switch at half time. A lot of people have been crying out for Nketiah to replace Bamford. They got their wish. How do the two halves compare then?
I mean, we were undeniably worse with him on the, with Nketiah on the pitch. Whether or not you can blame him for that, I don't know.
I mean, there was a lot of lumping the ball towards him.
Yeah, I mean, some of the chances Bamford had in the first half, I don't know, would you have rather had Nketiah there for them? There was one where he kind of shot across goal as well, which seemed, that was on his left foot, and that seemed like a half reasonable chance. Mm. And then the one, obviously, where he set up Costa instead. Would Nketiah have done better there? I don't know, possibly. But
it goes back to what you've said loads, though, Moscow, that if we get our noses in front with Nketiah on the pitch, and then you can stick Bamford on late on to hold it up and do that work and run the lines, maybe try it the other way around.
Bamford's been saying a lot himself about how he's trying to be more of a fighter this year. And you can see that he in the first 10 seconds, he ran through, and I think it might have been Sundjic again. He kind of pushed him on the back of the head as they were chasing a ball that neither of them was going to go, and he's letting the defenders know he's there, which, you know, is very brave of him, considering everything we've seen up to now, where he does just look like a softy. So he's now putting himself about, and I think that helps. Nketiah is different. He's trying to looking for through balls, and it's undeniable in the second half that the ball wasn't sticking in Birmingham's half. What then changed that I thought was interesting was that when Tyler Roberts came on, we were then a lot better at that. And I thought Tyler Roberts was really, really good. Not outstanding, but he was very good. And I had a little thing to myself, was like, because we've been crying out for where's that Saiz replacement creativity and why haven't we signed anybody to do that? And I was thinking, well, I suppose we did spend $4.5 million on Tyler Roberts, and here he is playing really well. And now he's sort of doing the job of keeping the ball in forward areas that Bamford was doing.
It does stick with him, doesn't it? It does stick.
It does, and it's the right thing. So I think it's when Bamford's on, the ball sticks with him, and when Roberts is on, the ball sticks with him. And if the advantage of having Roberts there is he's then looking for through balls to Nketiah, who might score them, instead of Bamford, who probably won't.
And that's the thing. Do we need it to stick early doors when we've got all that momentum, when we're creating all those chances in the first half? Is that when we need the poacher on, do you think, then, rather than the guy who makes it stick?
We just need, I mean, it's, I almost take all the personalities out of it now, because it's everybody. We need somebody who'll score. That's it. I don't care if it's Bamford now. I don't care if it's Nketiah. I don't care if it's Costa burying that chance after the back heel, or Alioski when he's 4 yards in front of goal. Just somebody in the first 20 minutes of a match needs to score, preferably twice.
We're missing Pablo, aren't we, do you think, Michael?
Yeah, of course we are. We're lacking central midfielders as well. I mean, at the end of the game, we basically have Phillips on, and he was our only central midfielder. And it was clear, I thought that they were just walking through the middle of us. Mm. They weren't trying to work it wide anymore, and I thought that actually worked quite well for them. They were just like, let's just go down the middle.
Yeah.
There's no one there.
Dallas went wide for some reason, didn't he? And yeah, well, I mean, it may be that, I mean, maybe I'm putting too much faith in Tyler Roberts, but maybe it is that while Pablo's injured, we need to use him instead of Click, or move Click back to where Dallas was playing, and put Dallas to right back and drop Luke Ayling. But Luke Ayling was fine. But I think it is that mix. I don't think we gained particularly from Stuart Dallas being a central midfielder, and I think we might be pleasantly surprised by how well Tyler Roberts could play behind a striker for us.
It's classic Bielsa. He doesn't want to drop his favourites, does he?
He doesn't want to change anything. It's clear. He likes this team. It was no surprise to anyone when the team was just the same as the last time, because that's what he does.
Changed at halftime, though.
He did.
It did feel like
this was Nketiah's chance, because he has been coming on fairly late in games generally. Mm-hmm. This was a fair split of him and Bamford having a half each. And I'm not sure.
Do you think he took that chance?
I'm not sure he's done enough that Bielsa will change it.
Preston, you wouldn't change it, would you, go Nketiah or Bamford?
Bamford always scores at Preston. So, and I'm sure that's exactly what Bielsa's just like. Fuck it, big lad always scores at Deepdale, loves it there. Scores more than John Parkin.
Billy Paynes has scored there.
Well, exactly. So it's set up for him, isn't it?
A happy hunting ground for Leeds strikers.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, it did feel that everybody's been crying for Nketiah to have his chance, so he gets half the game. Bamford hasn't scored in the first half. So.
All right, then, one thing we haven't addressed is, why do you think he got that half a game? What was it about that change that you think Bielsa thought necessary?
Hat-trick for England and loads of people on his arse.
Do you think he's prepared to bow to that?
Well, I think he maybe saw the type of chances we were creating and the areas we were getting the ball in and thought someone like Nketiah will be able to take advantage of those. Unfortunately, in the second half, we didn't play in the same way. We weren't getting balls across the six-yard box and, you know, flying around the edge of the area where people like him can nip in and create a chance out of nowhere. It was more long balls over the top and things.
This sort of fits with what Bielsa has been saying about it, where he's basically, I've got two really good strikers. I like them both. I want to use them both. And so, he's trying to say that both earned the chances. Patrick Bamford hasn't done anything to deserve to be dropped in Bielsa's eyes, but he can't ignore the fact that Nketiah is scoring hat-tricks in the England under-21s and presumably doing good stuff in training. So I think it's fair enough. Start with Bamford, same lineup as last time, and then halfway through just go, right, you've had a half. Not impressed. Eddie, on you go. So it's and letting them fight for it that way, because the only way Eddie can prove himself is to be on the pitch. So give him a half.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Right, talk to me about that goal then, because that was a nice moment, wasn't it? Calvin Phillips getting a goal. Yorkshire boy, 1-0.
Jack Harrison, the assist machine, provided another. Always said very many good things about his end product and his ability to lay on chances for others.
Should we just defer to Marcelo Bielsa's comments about this, about Phillips scoring it? Sometimes God puts things in the right place, and now he will stay forever in the history of the club with this goal, a clear act from God.
You can't really describe it in more reverential terms than that, can you?
We should also thank God for making Lee Camp a shit goalkeeper, because it went straight through him.
He was having kind of one of those game of his lives up until that point, though, wasn't he, first half?
I must admit, I vaguely remember him playing against us and doing quite well on previous occasions. Then I saw him in the Sunderland Netflix documentary, and he was absolutely awful for them. And I thought, oh, he must be terrible now. But yeah, he did appear to be quite good again to begin with.
They should have, given it was the centenary occasion, they could have given David Stockdale the game, couldn't they? Put him in goal. I'm sure he would have got into the spirit of the occasion.
Is he still there?
Yeah, he was on the bench for them.
Earning 35 grand a week or whatever it is, being fat.
You'll have his wife on Twitter. She does not like this kind of talk. And he's a good Leeds fan. I'm sure he probably had the best day of his Birmingham career so far. But no, it was good, and it was good. It's good that we scored, even though the kind of the game had taken a turn by that point, and we weren't playing well. We got a goal at a time when we just give us something to defend and something to then just panic about for the rest of the match.
What other positives could we take from that match then? What was good in what was a fairly nervy occasion in the end?
I thought Berardi at the back, considering. They had Djukovic playing, who's a big target man of a sort of a striker. That looked on paper like they'd be causing us problems, particularly when they, I think it was about 20 minutes in, they got a first throw in, and you could see they obviously had plans for that, and everyone was moving forward. They like obviously we're going to work on the long throw, and it didn't actually cause much chaos, did it?
And he didn't get sent off either, Berardi.
No,
so he's done well.
Ben White continues to just be a class act.
Sick of it now.
He made one really good block as well.
I can't be having to play that good. I've decided I'm against it.
Yeah, in a very un-Ben White type challenge, actually, he threw himself at something in the box and made a last-ditch block, which was very important because that looked like it was probably going to go in had he not. I think he did get his chest on it or something in the end. I can't quite work it out.
Just his whole beautiful body.
Sculpted torso.
Yeah. What else? Tyler Roberts, as said, I was optimistic. He made me feel, reasonably good when he came on. I was like, oh, no, we aren't just going to defend for this entire half. We brought on a player who can attack. And on the first half again, I think there weren't many signs of nerves actually in the first half. I think it was only when we realised that Birmingham were in a game and we didn't have Bamford up top anymore that it started to get a bit dicey.
Did we learn anything from today, or did it just confirm what we already knew?
It's more of the same.
Yeah, it's really exactly the same.
It's always the same.
Is it going to be like this for the rest of the season, or do you think we're capable of changing it?
We just need to start scoring in first halves.
Mm.
That's been the issue in it. Most games when admittedly Millwall was a bit of a strange one because we had the red card so early on. But in like the Forest game and the Swansea game, early goals, like when just scoring, putting away the chances you're creating in the first half is what it all hinges on. We should have been going in probably two up today. Likewise, Swansea game, we should have been a couple of goals up. And then at which point you can be like, right, just let Ben White do his thing. Even if they manage to get a bit of a jammy goal from a corner or just breaks to someone in the score one, it doesn't really matter. Whereas we've not been scoring and then those goals become disastrous.
We've got two players, everybody from their previous club says, Bamford and Helder Costa, who I thought was pretty dire today. No, dire's a bit strong, quiet. He had some moments, but yeah, so he raised himself above dire. I didn't think Costa was very good, but him and Bamford, historically, fans have seen them previously say, if they get on a good run, they fly. Like, so we're kind of waiting for that from Bamford and have been for a while. I mean, just this season, really. Although he started off with a few goals, didn't he? You just have that feeling that if Bamford starts scoring, he'll score 10 games in a row and it'll be great. If Costa gets into gear, if Fernandes is still out, he might get the swing of it. Today's his third start for us.
It's not many, is it?
No, exactly. So we say Bielsa doesn't like to change the team, but there have been these changes where Luke Ayling has come back. So Dallas, who was brilliant at right back, is not at right back now. And that's happened because Forshaw, who started the season really well, like our midfield at the start of the season looked brilliant with Forshaw and Click and Phillips together.
And Pablo.
Well, yeah, Pablo starting on the wing and coming in, that everything about that was working brilliantly. And then now Forshaw and Pablo are both out injured. And so that means Dallas has had to move and then Cooper's out. So there have been these things that are kind of, we're not at full strength. And I think that maybe is making a difference. And Tyler Roberts is a player that Bielsa obviously highly rates. I was impressed with him today, and he's somebody who's not been available all season until now. He's still sort of coming back from injury and getting substitute appearances. So there's all these sort of bits that have kind of changed from the perfection that Bielsa wanted to start with and that we're dealing with.
Do we know if Tyler Roberts is happy with not being a striker anymore? Because he was definitely a striker when we signed him. And now he's not even used in that position at all, is he?
I haven't had the chance to ask him.
No, it just seems strange that we've converted him. And I think strikers, by their nature, tend to be kind of, well, they want to score goals and being pushed further back the pitch.
In the fairness, he's in the hands of Bielsa, who does this. He moulds players into different things, doesn't he? What I was going to ask before, Moscow, sorry when I talked over you, was do you think Bamford maybe, he's sort of carrying the burden of the team on his shoulders somewhat? It's not just him. It's kind of symptomatic of the wider problem, which because we've lost all those players and we don't feel dangerous. That's what we don't feel. We get lots of possession and lots of chances, but we feel like we lack danger or something toothless.
I think that's what I was referring to before. And if we go back to that chance in the first half when, okay, so Bamford's not had the shot, but then you had Costa, Harrison and Dallas all had chances to score and they didn't either. So they're all fucking culpable. And so, yeah, it's gone beyond the point now where you can pick out, single out Bamford and say that they're useless twice in scoring of goals. And but he's the sort of the one that you hope, I was saying that if he does score one, he might go on and start scoring a bunch. And you kind of, same with Nketiah, maybe he'll get into a run of form if he plays instead of him. But it needs somebody to just give the rest of them that confidence by just sticking the ball in the back of the net, and it's
that's actually the primary argument for Nketiah, because he's not carrying the weight of that, and he's, because he's confident, he's got that striker cockiness which we like to see in strikers.
I'd say I think he was a bit too cocky today.
You haven't told me that, but go ahead.
Shall I? When he came on as sub, he spent like he was doing kind of a warm up for the fans, just like before he actually came on the pitch, because he clocked at the West End where they were cheering him, so he's kind of like doing his thing there. And then do you remember towards the end of the game, he had the ball right down in front of the bench, and instead of trying to do a simple pass, he tried to do a little flick, and it came off. It was better than Alioski, but then he passed to Dallas or Harrison, I think, and Click was involved, and it ended up being a fuck up, and Birmingham had a chance, and it was all because he put his foot on the ball and decided he was going to be a little bit cocky with the defender instead of just playing the pass. And I think there's some of that confidence could almost be done with being like reduced. Bamford isn't confident enough.
No, I don't agree with
you. Nketiah is too confident.
Yeah, no, I disagree with that. I think and Bielsa has said it before, he likes players taking risks, doesn't he? And I like that. And if that's the worst of his ills, that he's a bit too cocky and overcooks it sometimes, then I'm all for it.
It's worth commenting on.
I just want to see somebody go in there with big balls. I mean, Bamford apparently, he says he's got big balls and he's very, very confident, believes in his own ability, but Nketiah is cocky. And I like that in a striker.
I like it in the penalty area. I'm just not sure about it on our halfway line. I think that's the thing. A risk is good if you're taking a risk for the purpose of creating a chance or something, but just doing it to kind of mock a defender when you're only 1-0 up, it's just a little bit. I think he could just... He's got the crowd behind him and all that, and I think he's like an inverse of Bamford. It's like, I'm not criticising him particularly for it. It's just an observation that... You could almost put, and this is the dream, we need to get Rob Price on the case. Can he put Nketiah's personality into Bamford's body and maybe his finish, and just like mould these two strikers together, and we'll play Patedi and Ket Bamford and Ketford, and we'll be absolutely fine. But it's the imperfections you get. You never get the perfect players. There's always things about them that are never quite there.
A quick word about the occasion today then, because I think the game itself needs that little bit of wider context. It was nice, wasn't it?
Very nice. All the players on the pitch and stuff. I'm a bit of a sucker for that sort of thing. I do just sort of get a bit dewy-eyed about the whole thing. They've seen the mixture of players as well.
Absolutely shut down emotionally in day-to-day life.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, apart from when you get inside Ellen Road and you see Norman Hunter and Eddie Gray.
It's only Jermaine Beckford and Howard Wilkinson having a chat that can make me cry.
Walking off the pitch with their arms around each other, and you just think, wow. Like, that's...
It does get to the heart of what it is that we feel as fans. We can't put words to describe it. We can't put a proper label on it, but it's just that thing, isn't it? It's the essence of being Leeds.
It was just so nice to see them. There was Brian Dean, Rod Wallace and Chris Fairclough all waving up. And I was trying to think what they were doing. I think they were taunting Noel Whelan because he was on the gantry. They're all giving him a big wave. And I think Rod Wallace was trying to get him to phone him. He's like, on the phone. Maybe it was that kind of a wave, like, wish you could have been down here, but I think they may also have been like, aha. But yeah, that mixture and going across all the generations of players who were there, and see Peter Haddock, like, it's great that he was there because unsung, and Brendan Ormsby being out there as well. So the players that they got there for this was a real good mixture.
And I think it was a nice way to rebalance what has felt up to this point quite an exclusive celebration for the centenary in terms of everything's cost a lot of money, whereas today was a fans' experience. I think they've done well to rebalance. So I think what had become, to some extent, a negative perception, I certainly felt excluded prior to today.
Yeah, I think we're going to talk about it more on the proper pod on Tuesday, but it was kind of the... when you take a step back and look at how it was worked out, it was always kind of... Thursday was the VIP night, and then last night, Friday night, at the pavilion was the £50 ticket one, which sounded like a bit more of a laugh, a bit more of a piss up. And then today was the one for free, wherever. So I didn't see it, but the stage that they had on the Lowfields, apparently Beckford was out there, and I think they had some of the other players just on the stage. And it's basically, if you've got a ticket for the match, you get to see all the stuff that's kind of been, other people have had on the days up to now. And it's the obvious day to do it, on the day when, because it's the best attendance of the season so far. And what's the easiest way of getting the most Leeds fans to see this is you do it at a game, bring them all out onto the pitch. And it was impressive, actually. I was a bit worried because they said get people in the seats by 2:30. And I think that's quite often a challenge. But Elland Road looked pretty much full from the gantry. So all those players got a full stadium. Everybody got to see the players in the end. And I even saw somebody with a boxed shirt that they'd bought. So presumably for less than it's being charged by scalpers on eBay. So somebody's happily bought that thing as well. So and the other touch, like the pre-match, we mentioned the fireworks, but just the touch where they had the names on the back of the jackets and they've recreated a little bit of, they've got them to line up and wave. So got to recreate the 74 photo. So I think some of the things they've done today that you do get for a match ticket, and then you can look at it on Twitter afterwards, it was like, and down to the glitter cannons on the front the roof of the West Stand that thankfully nobody, Michael said in the cars were coming in, nobody had to make that long walk back up there after the 3-0 defeat and just go like,
just put these away, shall we?
Yeah, guess we won't need these. And I did see some kids like outside the ground running around. They got fistfuls of those blue and gold streamers and like, oh, and and the kids of the time capsule competition, we'll talk about that this week as well, but the kids who got to put a brick in the tunnel for the next 100 years. So lots of little nice details that deserve to maybe cut through more than I think the club have communicated themselves.
Can I confess I did slightly snigger when they talked about inserting a time capsule into the players' tunnel?
Of course you did. Quick words on heroes and villains then. Should be quite a short one, I imagine. Heroes?
Calvin.
Yeah, I mean, as Marcel Bielsa says, he was sent from God today to do that.
No higher accolade. We've had dabblings with God before on this podcast, so yeah. And as for villains?
The Birmingham City fans been punching our stewards. Just watched a clip on Twitter of that happening.
Somebody remarked that they'd punched a female steward as well. And I know we're in an age of equality, but we don't want to be seeing stewards punched of any gender.
No, it was a bit unnecessary.
Yeah, we'd both left the stadium by the time that was kicking off, but... yeah, fuck Birmingham City, trying to spoil our party.
On the pitch, though, no real villains today.
No.
No one stood out as being a particular dickhead. Ref was kind of all right.
Yeah.
Do we want to have a go at Pep Clotet for making a match of it, or...?
He had the decency to lose.
Yeah.
He's done all right.
Yeah, Pep's a good guy, isn't he? So I'm glad it wasn't Gary Monk. Should we nominate Gary Monk? He can be a villain as well. Yeah. He probably goaded all those... it sounds almost sinister to say he's the Peaky Blinders boss behind the Birmingham City trouble.
We'll dive into all this properly in the proper podcast when we record on Tuesday. So thanks for listening to this edition of The Match Ball. Thank you to Levi Solicitors as well for getting behind us on this. We'll speak to you later in the week.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.